This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The family was on vacation when Nicole Hughes's 3-year-old son slipped into a pool and drowned. She says it all happened in just a moment. Now she's on a crusade to do what she can to prevent other families from experiencing such a tragedy. And joining us now to discuss what we may not know about kids and drowning is Nicole Hughes, founder of Levi's Legacy. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you for this opportunity to share this message. I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you being here. And we're also joined today by American Red Cross Scientific Advisory Council member and Indiana University School of Public Health Associate Professor William Ramos. Thanks for being here, William.
Absolutely. Looking forward to the conversation.
If those of you listening have questions or comments about this topic, give us a call, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Nicole, your organization, Levi's Legacy, is named for your 3-year-old son. Tell us about your son and the kind of boy he was.
My husband and I have been married for 15 years, and Levi was our third child, and he was our only boy, and he was so special. I mean, he was a typical 3-year-old boy. We had two daughters, and to be honest, we thought, well, he'll probably come out and be, you know, sort of, all we had were princess dresses in our house and nail polish. And we thought, well, he'll be, you know, like a watered down boy because all he knows is all these girl toys. But he was all boy, 100% boy. And just such, he was our last baby. We thought, you know, he was our family's little silly, energetic caboose.
And you've shared this before, the circumstances of Levi's tragic death. Tell us how quickly the world changed for you.
My husband's actually a physician. He's an anesthesiologist, and we traveled every year. This was our, we'd been traveling for over a decade with the same group of 6 families. And it was 6 physician families, actually, and they met during their anesthesia training. And this was our 7th year in this same house. And when I look back on his final day of life, it was June 10th of 2018. And my husband and I, like I said, he was our third child, and my husband's a physician, and I'm a teacher. And we thought we were doing everything right to keep our kids safe. And I have 16 pictures of Levi from that final day of what would be his final day of life. And he is wearing a life jacket or a puddle jumper in 14 of them. And of course, I had no idea that we were just marching toward the end. But that night, the dads all took, I mean, so we really were taking water safety seriously. I never, ever took my eyes off my kids when they were swimming or when we were around water, when we were walking to the pool or to the ocean. And that night, I got Levi out of the pool, took his puddle jumper off, and gave him a bath, and we were just waiting for it to get dark. The dads were taking the kids crab hunting. They always did. It was always the very first full night that we were there. They would take them crab hunting, and I put Levi's yellow crab hunting shirt on him, and he was so excited. He said, "This is not my pajama shirt. It's my crab hunting shirt." And of course, we lost him before the crab hunting trip even started. We were in the room. We were all in the, it was a really big house, and we stayed in the same house, and we were just in the kitchen all together. There were 12 adults and 17 kids. And actually, Levi had been sitting on the balcony with my husband, and I was trying to keep him awake because he was 3 and I didn't want him to fall asleep before crab hunting started. And he was watching my husband's phone, and I was more worried about screen time. He was watching Daniel Tiger so we could keep him awake. And I said, "Bring him inside. He doesn't need," you know, I was mentally tabulating how many minutes of screen time he had had that day, because that's what I was worried about as a parent. And he brought him inside, and I gave him a bowl of Cheetos. And then I saw this plate of brownies, and I thought, "Oh, I'm just going to split." You know, we were on vacation. He'd already just had junk all day. I thought, "What's one more brownie?" And I split this brownie in half and put it in his bowl, ruffled his hair. He looked up and he said, "Thanks, Mom." And, that was our last interaction. I turned away from him, and I wasn't drinking. My phone was charging in my bedroom, not even on that side of the house. And of course, I have relived these seconds over and over, and I don't know how we did not see him get out that door. And, you know, until my last breath, I will wonder and wish to go back to that second. I closed the Cheetos. I threw something in the garbage. I said something to one of our friends about crab hunting and walked out the door. I mean, it was a moment. It was so quick that when I walked outside on the balcony just to check and see if it was getting dark, really, to see when we were going to go crab hunting, and instinctively looked over the balcony, and there were two pools, and I just saw the crab hunting shirt, and it was right there in the deep end. And when I jumped in, of course, I ran screaming down the stairs, and when I jumped in to grab him, I had still not finished the other part of the brownie. And it was so fast. Even as horrible as it was for me to find him in the water and to have to pull him out, my husband, the six physicians there reacted immediately. Of course, they just heard whatever I was screaming, and were by the side of the pool by the time I got him out. And my husband didn't know who it was until he flipped him over. He was the one to flip him over. And he said, you know, at first he thought, but Levi's on the couch. There's no way this is Levi. And then, of course, he had to perform CPR. He started CPR on his son. It was so fast. And when I saw him in the water, he was wearing khaki shorts and a crab hunting shirt. And that was my first thought. It was confusion, you know, but we weren't even swimming. How can you drown when you're wearing khaki shorts, when you wore a life jacket and a puddle jumper all day long? How can you drown when you were sitting on the couch?
And I know that you've had those questions going around in your mind for the better part of the past 13 months, I imagine. And you had questions and you started to look for answers. And while you were researching issues associated with children drowning and how seemingly quickly it could happen, you found something that moved you to action. What was that?
Within a week, there were so many things sort of lined up, but really it was the statistics. When my husband, as I said, he's a cardiothoracic anesthesiologist, an airway expert, really. And like I say, it was our third child. And, you know, I read everything about parenting. Like I said, I was worried about screen time and had Levi come in off the balcony just minutes before I would pull him off the bottom of the pool. And when my husband actually found the statistics first and he showed them to me, it was exactly 1 week to the day that we lost Levi. And the drowning is the number one cause of preventable death for children 1 to 4. And the real, I mean, it was our heart shattered all over again when we read the statistic that almost 70% of the time, the vast majority of the time, toddlers who drown when they aren't supposed to be in the water, when they somehow slip out of a door unnoticed or however they are getting away unnoticed for just those seconds, those moments, that's when they're drowning. And that really, you know, it validated a little bit to us that of course this is when he drowned. You know, I mean, he's a toddler boy, the age group most at risk for drowning. He drowned but not swimming, and it happened so quickly. And I felt like surely this information is here and I just misplaced it. You know, how in 10 years of parenting, with my husband's years of training, how did this never come up? How did we not really know? If you'd given me a list of 1,000 reasons why one of my children would die, drowning would have been the 1,000th thing I would have picked, because I watch my kids when they were swimming. And we took water safety seriously, like I said, with the life jackets and the puddle jumpers. And my older daughters could swim at age 3, and Levi couldn't. And it really, I felt like I still feel like I'm chasing his murderer. It was so senseless. We aren't perfect parents. Nobody, you know, is. I'm not saying we are, but we parented with intention and we did everything we could to keep our kids safe. I kept them rear facing as long as possible, and I breastfed all of them. And, you know, we did all of these things that I was worried about screen time and organic milk, and I still cut their grapes, and it's very, it's not a guarantee that Levi would still be here if I had really known the real truth about drowning and layers of protection and what I could have done to keep him safe. But I sure would have just liked the chance to know what I was really up against.
Nicole, we'll talk about Levi's legacy, your organization, and some of the work that you're doing in just a moment. Let's move over to William Ramos. He's an associate professor at Indiana University and a member of the Scientific Advisory Council at the American Red Cross. And William, the Red Cross plays a significant role in water safety. And I'm curious how drowning places on the list of concerns that parents need to have.
Thanks, Michael. Well, first of all, let me send my deepest sympathies to Nicole and her family. I've been working in drowning prevention for well over 20 years, and every story, I'm familiar with her story through the work she's been doing in the Red Cross, and every story, even after as long as I've been working in the field, is still devastating to hear. And I appreciate the work she's doing in the field to help bring the message to the forefront. Back to your question, drowning is top of mind at the Red Cross. We see ourselves as a leader in drowning prevention and education. It's just difficult sometimes when you are well into 100 years plus putting out the message, and there still seems to be some gap or some places that are missed. So we are continually looking at our programs, looking through research studies on how we can really get these messages across.
How much knowledge, William, should the average person have about the dangers of waters and how to perform a rescue when necessary?
A fairly good amount of knowledge, I think. If you're going to purposely plan or be around a water space, whether it be a man-made space like a pool or a natural space, a lake, river, beachfront, and I think maybe that's one of the gaps is people don't think about the preparation and the pre-knowledge they need to participate in these types of things. The Red Cross pushes out kind of two educational programs. One is the Circle of Drowning Prevention that gives kind of five key components that people can think about and research and prepare to get on the prevention side. And then if something were to happen, there's the Chain of Drowning Survival, which is, again, a series of five events that help people pre-think and plan in the event that something happens, to give them the best chance for a better outcome.
What about the ways we talk to children about water safety? Do we do it enough, William?
I don't believe so. I think it's maybe in the moment, because not everyone has consistent and ongoing access to the water, I think it tends to be a temporary conversation. And then if you take it to seasonal states, for example, the Midwest, where pools really are only top of mind during summer months, I think we lose some of the conversation and some of the opportunity to talk just because a lot of people just don't engage in the water outside of the summer season.
I've seen statistics that show that the risk is higher for boys and that children of color are also at a higher risk. Is there any data available that indicates why that might be?
Well, we have the data that tells us who and how, and we're getting better and starting to head towards why. But nothing really concrete for youth males. We tend to think it's because they have higher risk-taking tendencies. But again, I don't know if there's any real data on that. And then with some of the racial or ethnic disparities that we see, we often think that's related to socioeconomic status and availability and opportunity to engage and just to be familiar and then, of course, learn to swim as well.
Nicole, as a response to your son's tragic death, you created an organization called Levi's Legacy, and part of its mission statement is to, quote, erase the stigma associated with drowning.
Yes.
And I want to know what you think that stigma is and why
yes.
it exists.
I'm so glad you asked me that. And I think it really piggybacks perfectly on what was just said, because, you know, now I've had the chance to work with the Red Cross and to connect with them and with the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I see that this information is being pushed out there, you know, and I think, how did I not know it though? And how, because it is out there. So I'd never want to undermine, you know, the work that is being done ever. But with, you know, we were on vacation, like I said, with six physician families, and we live in six different states, and it's Louisiana, Florida, South Carolina. I mean, these Georgia, you know, Southern states with mostly with coastal access. And later, a few days after Levi died, every single one of my friends would tell me that even though I was on the balcony overlooking two pools and an ocean, when I started screaming, every single one of them said they thought someone had fallen down the stairs. And I think, why is it such an afterthought? Why was it not at the forefront of their mind when we are here at a beach house with a house full of toddlers and I'm overlooking a pool and still drowning didn't come to anybody's mind? And I think that that is the problem in general with our culture. It isn't necessarily that the information about drowning isn't out there. It's that nobody ever thinks it's going to happen to them. There is definitely a stigma. I used to think it too. I always found the loophole that this is just the truth, that I thought drowning happened to neglectful parents who didn't watch their kids when they were swimming. And because so much of what we read about drowning prevention focuses on, it's the same old thing, you know, watch them when they're swimming and you know, one eye on the water and arm's length, and all of that is so important. I'm not saying it isn't, because it is. But when you're looking at the number one age group most at risk, toddlers, and the number one reason most of them are drowning is, or number one, how often, it's when they're not swimming. And that is really what I think the missing part is. I've, of course, been connected with hundreds of families who have lost a toddler to drowning. And it's this, it's like the same story every time, every time. Everyone came inside to eat lunch. While they're heating up the Easy Mac, somehow the toddler swims back outside. They put their toddlers down for a nap. It's the first time ever they climb out of the crib when the mom's doing laundry, you know, make it to the back of the pool. And so I think that that is part of the missing factor. And for people who say, well, I watch my kids every second, you have to be honest with yourself. I mean, you have to use the restroom at some point. Like, I was closing a bag of chips. I mean, I wasn't doing anything neglectful. But it's this stigma around it, that of who it's happening to and when it's happening. And I think the biggest, the most painful part of all of it is this idea that it's a punishment. And we don't even realize we're thinking that, but I will be honest. I mean, that's probably how I saw it before, you know, water stole my son and knocked me off of my high horse, is that you think, well, why weren't those parents watching their kid? Or why did that teenager jump off of a cliff without a life jacket? Like, why would they do that? And it's really quick to just, you know, tisk tisk and throw our stigma, you know, just latch onto the stigma and this idea of it being a punishment. But the reality is that it's not happening to neglectful parents, that teenagers don't know. And the problem is that it doesn't matter anyway, because it's not happening to the parents. Is horrific as this heartache and this regret that we will carry for our lives. Drowning didn't happen to my husband and me. It happened to Levi. So it doesn't even matter whether we were neglectful or not. I mean, we have found our own peace and are working toward that, because we know we weren't being neglectful, but it doesn't even matter, because it's happening to our children. And that is what we are doing wrong as a culture, is we are failing to remember who is losing their lives here. And it is toddlers who don't know any better. My son thought he could swim because he wore a puddle jumper all day. And he thought when he got in the water that he was going to float. He did not know what would happen when he got in the water without me. And teenagers think, they're teenagers. You know, when they jump off of a cliff, they don't understand that drowning doesn't play to some rule of averages. It doesn't matter how many times you've jumped off a cliff and come back up. It's the one time you don't that matters. And that is really where I think we have to start seeing water. You know, I don't stand in a parking lot and say, come on in. It's super fun. Let's get comfortable in the parking lot. Jump on in. Don't be scared. But yet that's exactly what we're doing with water. Without, at the same time, I mean, we love water. My older girls still swim all the time. And, you know, I'm determined they aren't afraid of water, but they do have to have a respect for water. And that respect needs to come along with the skills and the confidence. It can't just be how much fun water is without the dangers and really helping those toddlers to understand how dangerous it is as well.
Okay, we have just about 45 seconds, a minute left. William, for those who have listened to our conversation today and want to take action, what do you recommend as their first step?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Sure, William. I was wondering, for people who are listening today, what do you recommend as their first step to learn more, to take action?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of resources available through, again, the Red Cross and several other organizations that are in the business of drowning prevention and have a large stake in making sure that people are safe. So I think just understanding the environments, the aquatic environments you're going to be around, understanding, like Nicole said, the statistics, who are most at risk, although really, when it comes down to it, drowning really isn't discriminatory. I mean, we do see people, we did see, for example, the famous Olympian Bodie Miller had a tragic drowning in his family. So it does cross all kinds of levels. So I think just, again, Red Cross or any organization that's pushing out the information, knowing the type of venues that you'll be participating in, and really diving into the literature.
William Ramos is a professor at Indiana University, and he's on the Scientific Advisory Council at the American Red Cross. Nicole Hughes is the founder of Levi's Legacy. Nicole, we thank you so much for sharing that story with us today.
I really appreciate that everyone's willingness to listen. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.